So my friends, you know it wouldn't be me if I didn't have a story to tell you. So today I'm going to share a story with you about a couple of kids. And I have a picture of these kids. There's one of them. That's me in middle school. And this is the other one. This is Jonathan, who is my former stepson. Now you have us in your minds. When I was working on my master's degree in spiritual psychology, I had to take a social sciences statistics course where I was tasked with creating a measurable scientific experiment. You know, the kind where I had to create independent, dependent variables and measure the outcomes. We were directed to formulate some personal, spiritual, and intra-psychic practices, with the subject matter being another person. These were the independent variables. From there, we were to measure the changes in the behaviors of this other person who was our subject, who had no idea that we were running this experiment. The catch was, this had to be the person in our life with whom we had the most difficult relationship. So at that time, I was early in my marriage to a man I loved dearly who had three teenage children. So I was a new stepmom. The most difficult relationship I had at this time in my life was with my youngest stepson, Jonathan. Jonathan was about 14 years old at this time. He was good-looking, athletic, charming as all get-out, self-assured, and masterful at getting his way. And as most stepkids who find themselves thrust into a relationship with a woman they don't want in their lives, his behaviors indicated he didn't like me. And the feelings were mutual. When he'd come over to spend time with his dad, I'd make myself scarce, often hiding out in the bedroom during his custodial time with us or just staying away. It was hard. So when I was given this assignment, I knew who my subject would be. So I went to work setting up my experiment and formulating my independent variables. I found a picture of Jonathan and printed it. I framed it and took it to my office at work, and every morning I would light a candle in honor of Jonathan and do a loving kindness meditation, opening my heart to him and sending him love and light. It was not easy. And quite frankly, it seemed like an exercise in futility. But being the good student that I was, I did as I was instructed. Next, I began a morning gratitude journaling practice. And in my practice, I would write sentences of gratitude for anything that I could find that I appreciated, valued, and observed as acceptable about Jonathan. At first, they were things like, "I'm grateful that Jonathan spends most of his time at his mom's house." Or, "I'm grateful that Jonathan had a football game and didn't come to dinner tonight." Or, "I'm grateful Jonathan loves his dad." I also launched into a self-counseling practice where I would journal my thoughts and feelings about Jonathan. I'd scratch out in my journal sentences like, "I don't like this kid. He's so snarky. He's cocky and arrogant. I don't like him because he's manipulative and is always trying to get something for nothing." I'd feel the irritation in my chest and the hot feelings behind the sentences. And I would think to myself, "This isn't helping. This is actually making things worse." My plate was extremely full at this time in my life. I was running a company, being a mom and a stepmom to four kids, and going to graduate school. So I would get up and do my homework at 4 a.m. during the week so I could have some quiet time alone before the kids woke up and the day launched. One particular morning, as everyone was asleep in the house, I began my self-counseling practice. And at this point, I was using some sentence stems and journaling prompts to focus my writing. As I wrote about my reactions and feelings about Jonathan, I asked myself a question: who does Jonathan remind you of? And as I journaled and took myself back in time, I began to connect with this little seventh grader inside of my inner world. The seventh grader that I was, a military brat, my mother called her Grinder, had just moved back from Mississippi to Louisiana and was being bused to a middle school out in the country in the midst of some cotton fields, and she was surrounded once again by new kids. She was an outsider, awkward and nerdy, and painfully self-conscious. She was also bright, a hardworking student, and truthfully a world-class teacher's pet. And as I sat in the lamplight of the early morning hours, I began to revisit her experiences in that seventh grade world. I began to tap into this awareness that she had been surrounded in class by boys who pretended to like her so they could get her to do their homework or cheat off of her paper during a test. There was this seventh grader inside of me who cared so much about being a good girl and not getting into trouble, who was being manipulated by these boys. The good-looking, athletic, cocky, and self-assured boys were using her to get good grades. On this morning, I began to weep and wipe tears as I journal and connected to this part of me. I saw her in my mind's eye, feeling trapped and scared and not knowing how to deal with the circumstances she was in. Afraid of rejecting these boys' attempts at cheating off of her, afraid of the teacher finding out, afraid of being spanked or getting a bad grade, and not knowing how to stop it all from happening. Home was not safe for this girl, and now school, often her happy place, was not safe either. She was overwhelmed with anxiety and dread, trying to navigate things that were too much for any kid to handle. And more than anything, she wanted to be accepted and liked. My heart burst open wide with love and compassion for the girl that I was and the pain that she had endured. I sat with myself, holding her in my heart. My feelings about Jonathan began to make sense to me. His rejection of me and my new role in his life was triggering a protective defense that I had psychologically erected way back then to protect myself from all the places where I was feeling used, trapped, and vulnerable, where I had been holding a misunderstanding that I wasn't lovable and felt powerless to stop myself from being violated. So my self-counseling work turned to a relationship between my present adult self and this seventh grader inside of me. I began to journal and dialogue with her. I began to help her feel seen, lovable, and safe. I began to show up for her in ways that demonstrated I cared about her and that she wasn't alone. I gave her a voice to share about all the things that I had shoved down inside myself and forgotten, because for her, they were too painful to take out and look at. And I began to see Jonathan more clearly, and not in all the ways I had judged him as bad and wrong, but more through the lenses of a developmentally normal teenage boy who wanted what he wanted, the way he wanted it, when he wanted it, and who, like most adolescents, really didn't want adults to be the boss of him. I began to see him as a boy stuck in a situation, having lost his intact home with his mom and dad, being forced into a relationship with a woman that represented to him the loss of the dream that they would get back together again. So lighting a candle and doing a loving kindness meditation towards Jonathan each morning, keeping a daily gratitude practice focused on Jonathan, and these self-guided personal counseling sessions were my independent variables. And no one knew that I was running this experiment or engaging in these exercises except the people in my class. My dependent variables were tracking changes in Jonathan's behavior. I had a notebook where I'd record the date and his behaviors. And at first, when I started this experiment, Jonathan would walk into the back door of our house, walk past me in the kitchen, where I usually was when he came over, and would not greet me or even acknowledge my presence. As time passed, though, things started to change. Jonathan would come in the back door as I was standing over the stove preparing dinner, and he would say, "Hey, Grinda." I'd respond, "Hi, John." I'd record these events in my notebook. And then he'd begin to ask me, what was I cooking? And about my day, I'd pull out my notebook and record these events, quite amazed, honestly. Within a few weeks, he began to ask if he could taste what I was cooking. And then he would show up early and ask if he could help me cook. He even began to ask me to teach him how to make a recipe. This kid, who wouldn't talk to me and I didn't like, soon began to get in the kitchen with me and we'd cook together. We even decided to try a variety of different chocolate mousse recipes to see if we could replicate his grandmother's secret recipe and discovered that we liked one we came up with even better than hers, which we never told her, by the way. I fell completely and madly in love with this kid. If someone had told me that that could have happened, I would have called them crazy. My experiment was a remarkable success, and I could not wait to go to school and share the results with my professors. There were a couple hundred students in my class, and as the end of the semester approached, all the students orally reported on the results of our experiments, and I thought my results were going to be remarkable. But across the room, presentation after presentation, I learned of other students' changed relationships. I heard about some that could have even been described as miraculous. People that had been cut off for years reunited, the subject calling or writing out of the blue. People bitterly divorced, repairing and co-parenting in communicative and cooperative ways. Families that had been torn apart due to wills and inheritances, finding reconciliation and healing connection. Healed relationship after healed relationship, presentation after presentation. I was changed, and my relationship with Jonathan was changed. And as we closed out that semester, I was learning also that most of the students in my class had had similar outcomes. I knew that I was discovering something powerful. I began to understand my teacher's repeated mantra, everything is an inside job. I learned that what is inside of me is manifested outside of me. I learned that we are all interconnected, and that by healing and changing my inner relationship to myself, miracles can happen. I felt profoundly empowered. Gone was my victim-minded mindset, my othering, my belief that life would be better if this person would change, or if they just weren't in my life at all. I began to recognize and practice agency in my relationships. I began to believe that if I was being triggered by another person, it most likely had to do with an unresolved or unhealed place inside of my own experience that I was likely projecting onto this other person. I honestly can't tell you how my inner work directly changed my relationship to Jonathan. I'm not sure what happened that first day when he walked in the house and said hi to me. Perhaps it was simply that I was more open to receiving his gesture and responded in a way that was friendly and less curt and rejecting. The complexities of these things, I'm certain, are multi-layered, and many things about how our neural networks interact with each other is yet to be known. But I suspect is soon to be an important frontier of discovery about how we interrelate to each other on many levels. But I do know my willingness to do the work was the first step. To take that picture to my office, to send Jonathan loving kindness, to practice gratitude, and to carve out time to ask myself questions and to listen to my inner responses were important measures. To let go of the defensiveness, the justifications for my negative viewpoints, the judgments and the othering of Jonathan were not easy. They were all ways that I had used to keep myself safe. But these tactics were also keeping me defended, separate, and righteous. I'm really so grateful for that assignment. It took appealing to my inner perfect student to motivate me into the discomfort of the work. The gifts I received were so much greater than a good grade, and they serve me to this day. I tell this story to most of my clients in my work as a psychotherapist. I say to each couple that shows up in my office in conflict and disconnection that everyone walks into my office saying, "This would be a great relationship if this other person would change." I offer the painstaking truth. We can't change anyone. We can only change ourselves. And when two people begin to operate from that frame, I see miracles happen in relationships right before my eyes over and over again. So I'd like you to think for a moment about the most difficult relationship in your own life. Think about the most difficult relationships we have in our society and the most difficult conflicts that we are in across our planet. Think for a moment about all the places where you and we as a people are stuck in defense, righteousness, and judgment about others. If we indeed are part of an interconnected web of humanity, and all things that exist in our ever-expanding universe are inseparable, what might happen if we each began to run our own experiments? What could we change? What miracles could occur? What healing could we create on planet Earth if we began a ripple of change and healing and love that started within our own hearts and in our closest relationships? I'd like to leave you today with words from a man much wiser than me, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It really boils down to all to this. It really boils down to this, that all life is interrelated. We are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied into a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. We are made to live together because of the interrelated structure of reality. We aren't going to have peace on Earth until we recognize this basic fact. We must find peace within in order to create peace without. Go, my friends, let's make ripples of peace on this planet.